Hi, it's Zoe, and it's the new year. And today we're talking about what to do in the new year. So not the usual rah-rah goal-setting crap. We're going to do something far more practical, far more realistic, and far better. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
So welcome to the program. It is episode 15, and I'm recording this in Japan, where I am on a break from skiing because there is a massive blizzard happening outside. It has just been bucketing snow since we got here. The good news is the skiing's been awesome, and the second piece of good news is that the blizzard means we can take a break because my legs are absolute jello. So We usually do a ski trip, whether it's Japan or overseas to North America every January, and it's a good opportunity to take stock and reflect, and that's typically what we do in the new year, right? We say, okay, brand new year, it's all brand spanking new, shiny, time to change my life and set a new course and do things differently, and we set these outrageous goals, how we're going to lose 20 pounds and make 20 million and you know how it goes. And then we get to December or January the following year and go, well, that didn't happen. So we're going to take a look at why resolutions don't work and what I do instead these days, which is far more gentle and more transformative than the rah-rah of the January New Year's push. So before we get into that, I just want to let you know about a couple of exciting things. The Edge of Leadership Unconference happening here in Canberra, 28th of March, 2017, continues to be selling tickets. So the pool of available tickets is rapidly diminishing. So if you are in Canberra or you want to come to Canberra to get on board with this conference, and I do recommend that you do because we're going to be doing lots of amazing things about developing great connections, about exploring social agenda, and really expanding your leadership thinking. That's what you should be focusing on for the year. So it's a great opportunity. And it's at my website. Just go to zoerouth.com, click on events, and there you have it. The early bird tickets are still on special, so get in now. The other really thrilling thing is the launch of the Leader's Edge Mastermind. This is a high-level, high-end, year-long mastermind program, and we're going to be kicking it off in May on the Larapinta Trail out of Alice Springs. That was the sound of me getting goosebumps. I am so excited to bring this to you. It's not for everybody. Not everybody likes to trek around the bush. But that's not the only thing we're doing. That's how we're starting the program. And that's how we get big inspiration with the big views and learn to get to know each other. Because we'll be spending a year together developing our leadership and supporting each other on that journey. So again, you can check that out at zoerouth.com and click on Mastermind. And all the details are there. So this awesome book that I've been reading, it's feeding into a lot of things that I'm reflecting on lately, is called Adam Grant's Give and Take. He's got a couple of excellent TED Talks as well. And I'll put all those details, all the books I mentioned, all the links I mentioned on the show notes page, which is at zoerouth.com/podcast/New Year 2017. So New Year is, you spell it out, 2017 is the 2017. zoerouth.com/podcast/New Year 2017. All there, all the goodies right there. So here we go. Let's talk about resolutions and goals, this sort of New Year hoopla. What I find happens for me and for a lot of my clients is that we get this great sort of sense of new opportunity that looms in front of us at the beginning of the year, and it gives us a sort of false sense of promise. And I think it gives us a false sense of promise because we think all of a sudden magically we can flip the switch and it's all going to change for us. But things don't happen that easily for ourselves. This is why resolutions themselves don't work that well. First of all, I find that they're rooted in making ourselves wrong. We base resolutions about wanting to fix something about ourselves. So if we need to fix something, it means that something is broken. And the truth is, none of us are broken. There's nothing wrong with us. So it's kind of a false it's a flagellation, I guess, a self-beating up exercise when we start with need to fix self. And anybody who's ever resolved to lose weight has that kind of undercurrent going on with that setting a resolution. The second thing that happens when why resolutions don't work is that generally they require discipline to enact. So if we decide that we're going to lose weight, it means that we need to stick to a diet. That's generally how the formula goes. And the thing is about discipline is that it's an infinite, no, sorry, it's a finite resource. It's kind of like we have this willpower battery that if we have eaten well, slept well, exercised well, we're in good fitness, we wake up in the morning with a full battery, and then it starts to get depleted. It gets depleted with every decision that we make, with everything that we have to decide upon, every choice that we make. That's three things, three ways of saying the same thing. So decisions deplete the battery, but also so does learning. Learning requires a bit of discipline and focus, so that drains the giant discipline battery. And the other thing is if we had to stick to a diet, making choices and saying no to things, that drains the battery. The reality is that when we wake up, we have so many choices in front of us, for anything from what to wear to what to eat to how to get to work. Some of those we put on autopilot, which is good, saves the battery a little bit. But the thing is, we're bombarded with so much information and stimulation that the discipline battery gets drained pretty quickly, even before we even leave the house. So using discipline to work on your resolutions is a bad idea. This is the third thing I find about why resolutions don't work is generally we haven't gone deep enough on the why and the who of the resolution. And we're just stuck on the what. So for example, want to lose weight, I will go on diet. Diet looks like this. I will exercise four times a week. And we go from want the outcome to the project management piece. But the real juice of making these things successful is in the why and the who. What I mean by that, the why of a project or why of a resolution or goal is about really digging deep into what matters about this thing. Is it just a wishful thinking exercise? Is it a should that you think you ought to adapt for yourself because your neighbor's done it, your sister's done it, whatever? The why for a resolution or goal really needs to be deep-seated and resonant for you. And most of us don't do the work on that. And the who part is generally, if we're going to shift or make a change in our life, we have to change our identity. It's pretty fundamental. What do I mean by that? It's because how we make decisions is based on who we are and what we value. And so unless we change who we are and what we value, the decisions we make are not going to change. It's kind of that circular reinforcement point. Another great book that goes into great detail around why we are immune to change is the book of the similar name, Immunity to Change by Keegan and Leahy. And again, I'll list that on the show notes page. And what they discovered in their research is that often when people, even with the most compelling reasons to change, like they're dying from emphysema, do not change their behavior, i.e. they don't stop smoking, is because they have some deep-seated counter-intentions, an unspoken hidden value or payoff from not changing. So unless we unearth those things and look at them and deal with them, we're just going to repeat the same self-sabotage patterns. All right, so what do we do instead? So we figured out why resolutions don't work. Here are the things that I have adapted and adopted to make sure that this New Year thing doesn't become a self-sabotage experience. So if I do want to experience something different, not because there's anything wrong with me, but because I want to have an upgrade in my human experience on the planet, this is what I do. Step one. I get a super clear picture of what I want and what I want to experience, become, or achieve. Now, this is really important to me, and I've been thinking about it for me for this year, 2017, because last year, I haven't told anyone publicly this yet, but I had adrenal fatigue. And that means basically worked too hard and burnt out my adrenals, which shows up as being exhausted. So having very little energy to do stuff. And it's quite debilitating. So I've gone through a whole protocol on how to fix that to increase the energy in my life, etc. And that experience has made me want to have a different kind of experience. I want balanced energy. I want to feel refreshed, excited, enthusiastic about the day, and refreshed at the end of the day. So I don't get to the end of my work day and go, lay flat in a coma. So I had good reasons for wanting what I wanted. So it came out of a bad experience. And yet I had a very clear picture of what I do want to experience now, which is the boundless energy piece. Why is this important to me is a step number two. So clear picture of what you want. Step number two is why this is important. So this is going to one of the critical reasons of why resolutions fail. So I'm going to fix that. For me, fixing this adrenal thing and getting boundless energy is important to me because you know what? Life is really short. And I don't want my default to be worry, stress, and overwork because that sucks. It really sucks. I don't want that. I want my life, my default, to be fun, adventure, joy, and happiness. So that's why this particular intention, and I call resolutions and goals intentions, it's got a different energy to it, and it gives us more parameters to be flexible around it. So I call this intention a very fulfilling one. So step three is to make sure you surface your counter intentions. What are the benefits of not changing? So I thought about this for myself. What are the counter intentions around this? So if I want a life full of fun, adventure, joy, and happiness, what is the payoff in the stress and overwork piece? And I thought about it, and you know what it is? I'd have to give up my push, push, push attitude. And what's bad about that? Well, I wondered if I did that, would I get less done? Would I feel lazy? Would I feel guilty if the work is fun and easy? See how crazy these counter intentions are? And yet they're there. And they are your secret self-sabotage things. So even though I consciously set the intention for fun, adventure, stress, joy, and subliminally. I made the intention for fun, adventure, joy, and happiness. If I had things that were fun and easy, did it feel like I was being lazy? So surfacing this makes it easier to deal with. So when you surface your counter tensions, you then have to look at, all right, how can I work with this? How can I deal with this? And you kind of start to rationalize it and recognize it for what it is. So when you see the self-sabotage in action, it's much easier to deal with. So step four is to then project forward. And there's two ways to project forward. Ask yourself this question. If nothing changes or continues on the same trajectory, what does your life look like? So if I don't change this work stress default, what my life will look like, very long and hard. And I won't have truly savored the moments, enjoyed friendships or family, or truly appreciated the ride. And I don't want to get to my deathbed thinking, wow, that was pretty tough. That's not what I want. So if I do make this change, and this is the part B of project forward, what will life look like? And I projected forward, making this change, I will be smiling, full of energy, I will be filled with gratitude, and life and work will be fun and easy and an inspiration to others too. So if you fast track to the end of your life, one road of not changing anything, it's pretty miserable, and the other road of huge satisfaction. Now, this exercise I got from Tony Robbins, I learned it yonks ago, and he calls this getting leverage. So when you have extreme pain and extreme pleasure associated with making this change, you've got leverage to move your ass and do something different. So that's a pretty important piece. So step five is, what identity do you need to embrace? This is the who of your intention. And for me, this is about becoming a mojo master. I need to be someone who prioritizes self-care first. So I started thinking about, what does a mojo master look like? And I actually have a model in mind. She's this gorgeous woman. She's tall and glamorous looking. She has glowing skin. She looks refreshed all the time. And she's a busy business owner with a small family to look after. And she just looks radiant. So that is me. That's what I'm embracing, is the mojo master, like Alessandra is her name. So that's the identity I'm embracing. I'm mojo master. And every little decision flows from that. So I ask myself, would a mojo master make this choice to stay up till midnight watching a movie when I should be sleeping? No, she would not. She would set a bedtime, go through a bedtime routine, and go to sleep. So part six is, or step six, I should say, is setting an intention. So I mentioned this previously. Instead of setting a goal or resolution, set an intention. And this is a summary word that reflects the emotional state of the result, that captures the real earthy why. And my word is radiate, kind of like a sun. So setting the intention is a pretty crucial piece, because that's going to be your anchoring word or sentiment that's going to help you really dig in when the going gets tough. And it will get tough, that's for sure. All right, step 7 is implement a tiny habit. So rather than get carried away and go, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, Mojo Master does this and that, and you say, I'm going to change my morning routine, my afternoon routine, and my evening routine, and I'm going to... That's where the goal thing happens, and we get all excited, and we decide that if we're going to change something, we need to change everything. So don't do that. Make it easy and digestible. So pick a tiny habit to start with. So for me, my option was a look at my end of workday transition, because I noticed that this is one of the places I get tripped up. I tend to keep working until Rob comes home, and there's no transition between work, and then all of a sudden I'm making dinner, eating dinner, and bed. So a way to get more energy out of that is to have a nice little 20-minute transition between closing down the laptop, summarizing my work for the day, planning the next day, doing a bit of meditation, and then going into evening. Doesn't that sound way better? It does to me anyway. So that's my tiny habit I'm implementing. And how do you choose a tiny habit? Well, one of the things you can do is substitution of a poor habit with a good habit. It's that if this, then this. So for example, if you have a drinking Coca-Cola habit, you might think every time you go to reach for a Coca-Cola habit, you go, instead of Coca-Cola, I go for coconut water. That was my mentor, Matt Church, had that. I don't think he drank Coke. It might have been Diet Coke or something, but he wanted to get off the soda habit, and that's how he did it. If I was going to reach for a soda, I was going to have coconut water. So that's a really good way to develop a tiny habit. Another way is to anchor it with an existing habit. So if you already brush your teeth and you want to introduce something around brushing your teeth, maybe it's journal reflection. Maybe you brush your teeth and then you do a 2-minute journal reflection, or you do 2-minute journal reflection and then teeth brushing. So you anchor a new habit with something that's already, you're already doing daily. And that way it's just a little bit incremental change. It's not a huge big deal. Another aspect of developing a tiny habit is to track it. Set up a 30-day page, you can do it handwritten in a journal or something like that, 1 through 30, and check off every day that you do it. Easy, right? And that sense of dopamine you get from ticking off each day, that's compelling. And when you get on a run, you don't want to break the run because it feels bad. So that's one way to get the tiny habit going. Another way you can work on the tiny habit is to make it public. How is that for public accountability? You don't want to disappoint your friends and family. So you can put it on, place your intention on the show notes page or on your Facebook page. And that sort of amps up the ante, because nobody wants to let their reputation be at stake. All right, step 8 is make your intention highly visible. So that means highly visible to you. So you can put that, use your tracking page, you can use phone reminders, you can use post-it notes around the house, you can do your vision board thing. Make it really like everywhere you go, ping, 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 there is your intention in your face as a reminder. And the last step is to check in and reflect. And I think you need to have a regular cadence of this, whether it's daily or weekly, monthly, or quarterly at the latest. At first you probably need to check in daily just to make sure you're cementing the tiny habit around this. And when you're doing your reflection, check in what's working and give yourself some appreciation for following through and making things work. Also check in what's not working. Where are you getting sidetracked? Where are you going off the rails? And then you have to keep asking yourself the question, is this a really solid intention that is meaningful? Do I have enough why and who associated with this? Or is this a should or a must? Am I really convinced about the benefits about it? Have I done enough leverage around this thing? And sometimes you have to throw your intentions out because you just had to go and you weren't serious about it. Because of the why, who, and leverage mostly. So it's important to check in with that, and it's okay. If your intention isn't really what you set out to do, that's cool. Just move on. Life is too short. All right, so let me just review this 9 steps here. Step 1 is get a clear picture of what you want to experience, become, or achieve. Number 2 is why this is important to you. Number 3 What are your counter intentions? So surface those suckers. Number four is project forward. So if nothing changes, what happens? If you do make this change, what happens? Number five is what identity do you need to embrace? So the who of the thing. Set your intention. So use a summary word that makes the whole thing real and alive for you. Number seven, implement a tiny habit. Number eight, make your intention highly visible. Number nine, check in and reflect. Well, I'd love to hear how you go with this, or whether you have any other tips and hacks for other listeners about how to achieve solid intentions that have worked for you, or what you're working on. I'd love to hear about that. So go to the show notes, zoerouth.com/podcast/newyear2017. In the meantime, live well, lead well.